Today I'm going to read from the Bhagavad Gita as it is, Chapter 5, Karma Yoga, Action in Krishna Consciousness, text number 15. Nadate kashitit papam na papam sikritim vibhu agyane navritam jnana tena muyanti jantava. Nor does the Supreme Lord assume anyone's sinful or pious activities. Embodied beings, however, are bewildered because of the ignorance which covers their real knowledge. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The Sanskrit word vibhu means the Supreme Lord, who is full of unlimited knowledge, riches, strength, fame, beauty, and renunciation. He is always satisfied in himself and undisturbed by sinful or pious activities. He does not create a particular situation for any living entity, but the living entity, bewildered by ignorance, desires to be put into certain conditions of life, and thereby his chain of action and reaction begins. A living entity is, by superior nature, full of knowledge. Nonetheless, he is prone to be influenced by ignorance due to his limited power. The Lord is omnipotent, but the living entity is not. The Lord is vibhu, or omniscient, but the living entity is not. The living entity is anu, or atomic. Because he is a living soul, he has a capacity to desire by his free will. Such desire is fulfilled only by the omnipotent Lord. So, when the living entity is bewildered in his desires, the Lord allows him to fulfill those desires. But the Lord is never responsible for the actions and reactions of the particular situation which may be desired. Being in a bewildered condition, therefore, the embodied soul identifies himself with a circumstantial material body and becomes subjected to the temporary misery and happiness of life. The Lord is the constant companion of the living entity as Paramatma, or the Supersoul, and therefore, he can understand the desires of the individual soul as one can smell the flavor of a flower by being near it. Desire is a subtle form of conditioning for the living entity. The Lord fulfills his desire as he deserves. Man proposes and God disposes. The individual is not, therefore, omnipotent in fulfilling his desires. The Lord, however, can fulfill all desires, and the Lord, being neutral to everyone, does not interfere with the desires of the minute, independent living entities. However, when one desires Krishna, the Lord takes special care and encourages one to desire in such a way that one can attain to him and be eternally happy. The Vedic hymns therefore declare, Esha u yeva saru karma karati tam yam ebyo lokebya uni nishate. Esha u eva sadhu karma karati yam ado ninishati. The Lord engages the living entity in pious activities so he may be elevated. The Lord engages him in impious activities so he may go to hell. Kaushitaki Upanishad 3.8. Agyao jantur anisho yam Atmana sukadukayo, Ishvara prerito gachet, Swargam vash babudram evacha. The living entity is completely dependent in his desires and happiness. By the will of the Supreme, he can go to heaven or hell as a cloud is driven by the air. Therefore, the embodied soul, by his immemorial desire to avoid Krishna consciousness, causes his own bewilderment. Consequently, although he is constitutionally eternal, blissful and cognizant, due to the littleness of his existence, he forgets his constitutional position of service to the Lord and is thus entrapped by nations. And under the spell of ignorance, the living entity claims that the Lord is responsible for his conditional existence. The Vedanta Sutra 2.1.34 also confirms this. Vaishamya nir Grinye na sapek shadvat tata hi darshiti. The Lord neither hates nor likes anyone, though he appears to. So the text again. Nadate kasite papam, na papam sikritim vivu, agena naritam jnana tena muyanti jantava. Nor does the Supreme Lord assume anyone's sinful or pious activities. Embodied beings, however, are bewildered because of the ignorance which covers their real knowledge. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Puristaya Bhutaye Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasatunde Ve Gauravani Vicharane Nirvishesha Srinivadi Paskyadyade Sadharane. This part of the philosophy is either very simple to understand or very difficult. It's difficult because if we understand it, we're liberated. And if we don't understand it, then we must be in conditioned life. And since many of us are conditioned, therefore it's difficult to understand how we ourselves are eternal, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, anadidvam nirgunadvat paramatmayam avyam sharira stopikuntiya nakaroti nanalipyate. That those who could actually see with the eyes of eternity can see that the soul is transcendental, eternal, and beyond the modes of material nature. Despite contact with the material body, or Arjuna, the soul is neither doing anything, nor is he entangled. So it's hard to imagine that we're not doing anything, because it appears that we're doing so many things. I'm moving my hands, I'm talking, I'm looking at you, you're looking at me. So many things are going on. But, according to this verse, we're simply a 1/10,000th the size of Tipperary size, which is not very big, by the way. And we're simply observing. We're observing in many ways. We're observing, first of all, through our senses, which includes, for instance, our sense of touch. So we're feeling, we're seeing, we're smelling, we're tasting. We're observing with our spiritual senses through the material senses. The body is not observing. The body is not smelling or hearing. It's the soul, ourselves, that are doing these things with our spiritual senses. But they're a condition in so far as that we can't see, we can't hear, we can't smell, we can't move, unless we do it with this material body and the material senses. But they act as a covering, just like if we have yellow glasses on, everything we see will appear to be yellow, although everything is not yellow. But since we're seeing through the glasses, everything appears to be yellow. So now we're seeing things through the modes of material nature, and they appear according to our whatever modes of material nature we're conditioned by. Now, the question is how we got here and how we get out of here, if we want to. Most people don't want to get out of the material world. They want to learn how to enjoy it more. In order to enjoy it more, they want information how to become a better controller, how to win friends and influence people, how to give someone a dime, 10 euros, and get back 1,000 from them. If we were giving a class on that, this whole room would be packed with people, even if we charged them 10 euros to come. They think it would be worth it. There's even an advertisement on YouTube constantly. He said, would you like to earn $1,000 a day and $1,000 every day? And you don't have to invest any money? What's that? Oh, you have to invest a little bit. Probably the person who's making this advertisement, he's broke. He has no money. He's trying to make some money by telling everyone, invest. You can make €1,000 or $1,000 every day without having to do anything. Just give your name. They just send every week, they send you 7,000 euros. because your name is so valuable. No, everyone wants to become rich and enjoy life to the maximum. So the idea that nothing belongs to us is hard enough to bear, to actually accept it. It's not a very popular philosophy, because nowadays they have this philosophy, you'll own nothing and be happy. So that's also our philosophy. We're also trying for the Great Reset. But we'll be happy by being Krishna conscious. They think they'll be happy by you'll own nothing, and you'll be happy in your ignorance. But one can't be happy in ignorance, nor by thinking oneself to be owning of everything, nor by actually imagining that we're doing so many things. Now we have a capacity to desire, both here in this material world and also in the spiritual world. The difference is, in the spiritual world, just by desiring, we do things. We have a spiritual body, and the spiritual body works simply by desire. And there's only one desire in the spiritual world, that's prema, love. So it's a very nice situation. Everything that you desire is out of love, and all the activities in the spiritual world are just manifestations of love. Should be a nice world to go to. And everyone's in love with Krishna, who has the reservoir of unlimited love and pleasure. So it's a very nice situation. And here, everything is based on desire also, but this desire is calm, or we want to control and exploit others. We want to serve our senses, and we want to be happy, and others can also be happy if it makes me happy. So everything is based upon desire. The question is which desire we want to choose. First of all, we have to understand to some extent the fact that we're not doing anything except for desiring, and therefore our desires are so important. Now we're introducing desire to chant Hare Krishna. Oh, the energy of the Lord, oh, the Supreme Lord, kindly engage me in your loving service. Now, most people are far away from appreciating that. And we're trying to develop an appreciation for how valuable chanting Hare Krishna is, or how valuable hearing about Krishna is. Because unless we value it, it's just one other desire. What should I do today? Oh, there's a Time magazine on my desk. There's a Srimad Bhagavatam. There's, you know, another magazine, the newspaper. What do I want to do? Well, I don't know. Maybe I'll just go to sleep. Or maybe I'll go to eat. Or maybe I'll read the Time magazine and then I'll switch over to the Bhagavatam and then go over to find out what the news is, the real news. So the idea is that we have to develop this appreciation for how valuable the Bhagavatam is, how valuable our philosophy is. So that when we have a choice, we take the right choice. So we actually take the right choice, and the right choice is only solidified if we read Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, and then actually not only hear what it has to say, but actually learn how to act in such a way as to experience it. That Krishna consciousness is not just a philosophy, it's an experience. And it's an experience mainly based upon relationships of loving exchanges with Krishna and his devotees. Desiring to do that means that we put our material body, our material senses, our material mind, our material conceptions, our material false ego aside, and we accept ourselves actually as souls utilizing these very things to please Krishna. We put that in the forefront and then try to the best of our ability, utilize our body, mind, and words in Krishna's service. The desire to do that. There's a desire is to how to use this body. There's desires of what kind of mood we're going to be in when we do our activities, what kind of perspective we have, what kind of vision we have, what do we desire, and what kind of faith we have. This is also desire. So Krishna says, tad buddhyas, tad atmanas, tad nishtas, tad parayanaha, gajantnya puna avritim, jnana nidhuta kamasha. One's faith, one's intelligence, tad buddhyas, tad atmanas, one's mind, tad nishtas, one's faith, one's refuge is all fixed in the Lord, then one becomes fully cleansed of all misgivings and thus proceeds straight on the path of liberation. So what does the self-realized person see? What is the great vision he has? Vidya vanaya sampane brahmani gavi hastini shuni chaiva swapake cha pandita samadarshana. The humble sages, by virtue of true knowledge, see with equal vision the learned and gentle Brahman, the cow, the dog, the elephant, and the dog eater. To actually see everyone equally as an object of service. We can see others as either objects of service, or we can see them as objects of exploitation. We have to choose how we're going to see others and how practically we're going to interact with them. If we see them as potential gain or loss, then automatically we'll be in a certain mood, a certain consciousness, a certain desire. Even we do something like book distribution, if we look at everyone as a big and small wallet, a potential donation or a useless eater, then that will cloud our activities. That we think if he takes out the wallet and gives a donation, my life is successful. Rather than this person's life is potentially on an upward path towards spiritual knowledge and realization, which is essentially why I'm there, as a servant of Krishna, as an instrument for Krishna's mercy, to help people somehow or another get some advancement in devotional service. If that's our mood in dealing with anyone, then our activity is successful. We may not be so expert, but if we have that mood, that appreciation, that vision, that desire, then whatever we're doing will be successful. And if we don't have that desire, we may be the most expert in whatever we're doing, but without desire, it's all material. So therefore, we're trying to cultivate that desire. Of course, Krishna is very merciful. When we have the proper desire, Krishna will at once reciprocate with us. Just because we have a little bit of sincere desire, Krishna at once gives us some of his internal energy just to encourage us. Krishna is not waiting for us to fast for 3 years or to stand on our little finger before he gives us his mercy. He's simply waiting for us to accept the proper desire, and that proper desire is to serve him, to help others become Krishna conscious. And if we're doing that in any way, then Krishna will be satisfied. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Yari Deka Tarikaha Krishna Upadesh Amar Agai Guruhana Tari Desh. Whoever we meet, Yari Deka Tarikaha, we should tell them Krishna Upadesh, something to help them advance towards Krishna. Amar Agai Guruhana Adesh. Then in that way, actually become an instrument for Krishna's guru and try to liberate others. Guru, that's what guru actually means. Krishna is not in the heart thinking, well, here's someone, he's giving initiation, he's guru, and his words have some meaning. Here's someone else, he's not giving initiation, he's just repeating my words, his words have no value. No, Krishna will empower the living entity, whoever it might be, if they have a sincere desire to help others become Krishna conscious. That's the only thing. How people take it actually we're trying, Prabhupada said two things. We're trying to create the atmosphere by which Krishna consciousness becomes available, becomes easily acceptable. At the same time, we're trying to spread the holy name. So whatever our position is, Guru Nasasyat, Swajano Nasasyat, Pita Nasasyat, whatever our position, it doesn't really matter. We have an equal opportunity if we simply desire to elevate whoever we may be receptive to the message of Krishna, if we try to help them in some way understand their relationship with Krishna. Because everyone is Krishna's servant, whether they accept it or not, but we should try to help them accept it in some way. Even Prabhupada was walking along in Australia and people would say, good day. And Prabhupada said, good day. So the devotees were wondering, well, why doesn't Prabhupada say Hare Krishna? So Prabhupada said that, they asked him. And Prabhupada said, well, if I said Hare Krishna, they think it was rather strange. But if I say good day, they think, oh, here's a nice man, he's friendly. And therefore they get some pious credit by saying good day to a saintly person. So somehow or another, to have that intelligence, Krishna will give it to us. If we want it, if we desire it, if we want to develop the desire to serve Krishna, then Krishna will give us the intelligence by which we can utilize this body and everything else connected to it in such a way as that we're actually pleasing to Krishna. We're actually fulfilling his mission. And when we're pleasing to Krishna, then Krishna reveals himself to us. Because that Krishna wants to reveal himself to us. That's why he comes here. He's begging, please take me. Please, I want to become, you know, involved in a loving relationship with you. And we're saying, well, maybe sometime. Thanks a lot. Whenever I feel like it. I'll ring the bell. Hey, Krishna, why don't you come for a while? Now, Krishna is very anxious that we go back to him. And he's just trying to put us in a situation by which we can appreciate how nice he is and therefore make a little endeavor to selflessly, out of devotion, serve him with some desire to please him. And then Krishna very quickly reveals himself to some degree or another to encourage us that we should try to make some more progress towards him. And if we go the other way, if we desire material things, that I have to be in the center, I have to be loved, I have to be served and appreciated, I have to be this or that, then Krishna goes away and Maya comes. Oh, you want to be in the center? Well, here, you're in the center. Whack! How does that feel? Well, Maya, I want to be in the center. I don't want to get whacked. Sorry. If you're in the center, you're going to get whacked. As soon as you want to be the supreme, then the other 8 billion people on the planet who are competing to become the supreme, they'll make sure that they're going to make sure that somehow or another, even you become the supreme, they're going to make your life miserable. Even Gandhi, Mahatma Gandhi, probably said that he was, I mean, somewhat of a pious man. He was a Mayavadi, but he was somewhat pious. And he got a huge following. And Prabhupada said, wherever he went, people were shouting all the time, Gandhi ki jai, Mahatma Gandhi ki jai. So Prabhupada said, everywhere he went, they were shouting like that. He said the poor man couldn't even sleep at night. Because all he could hear, he was trying to go to sleep, Gandhi ki jai. So we want to become the center. Then we may become a Brahma in some universe. Just imagine you become Brahma and we have four heads and you're hearing about all the problems in the universe. On all four sides, all you can see is problems. Because that's the material universe. All there are, everyone's complaining all the time. So here you have one head and there's problems, you get a headache. Brahma has four heads, he gets four headaches. And if you're a million-headed Brahma, you have a million headaches at one time. So what kind of progress is that? What kind of advantage is that? On the other hand, if we remain humble and give Krishna all the credit, and give Krishna's devotees the credit for our spiritual activities, because ultimately Krishna and Krishna's devotees within our heart, who are instructing us, they teach us how to perform devotional service, and when we perform devotional service, then the credit goes to Krishna and his devotees. We're simply agreeing to be utilized as an instrument for Krishna's service. And therefore, we don't have to worry about the results, good or bad. We don't have to worry about anything. We just have to worry about whether Krishna is pleased or not by the activities, whether our spiritual masters are pleased or not. And that's all we have to concern ourselves with, whether I'm actually pleasing to Krishna and fulfilling his mission by desiring that. And then the rest, my desire is that, and if my desire is correct, then everything else would be carried out by Krishna, by his internal energy, his spiritual energy. And the result will be that the spiritual energy is what attracts everyone, actually, because it's the loving energy. Everyone wants love. Everyone wants to be appreciated. Everyone wants to be feel that this person actually cares about me. So Krishna actually cares about everyone. That's why he's in our heart. And one who acts as his representative, he conveys that caring attitude towards others, and therefore naturally he becomes attractive. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions or comments? Yes.
I'm a fan of Sadhana Metta. It teaches how to release the feelings. I believe their feelings, no matter how they are beautiful, needs to be embraced and then let go. But my problem is I don't have enough concentration. And Ananda Vardhana Prabhu told me that I should chant Hare Krishna, like Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, and then Hare Krishna, and then Hare Krishna, Hare, to emphasize each next syllable, if I said right.
Okay, just keep on chanting, that's good, somehow or another.
Some other practice, so I sometimes get...
Take Pusharam also, with devotion.
Okay.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Don't be shy. Yes.
Thank you for inspiring lecture. I would just like to ask, when we recognize that when we want to change some of our desires, what is the process to actually change the desires? What are some crucial factors?
Sincerity. Honesty. We hear we're 1/10,000th the size of Tipperary's size, and we think, that doesn't sound very good. Is there another part of the philosophy which is a little bit better? We hear that Krishna is eternally God. We think, well, that doesn't seem very fair. You know, he could be God for a few billion years, but eternally? And there's no election. There's no navocracy. He stays in that position no matter what he does. He dances with all those gopis, he steals butter, he does so many things. He's still God no matter what he does. And if I steal one banana, I get caught. I get the reactions for it. This doesn't seem right. So we have to hear the philosophy and accept it and then apply it. We have to understand it thoroughly. And then if we make a little effort to apply it sincerely, then we understand things properly from the right source and try to apply it sincerely, then Krishna will encourage us by giving us some transcendental enlightenment and some higher experience, some Krishna consciousness of Krishna, some pleasure, transcendental pleasure in association with Krishna, which will inspire us to do something else, something more in Krishna service. So it's by the hearing the right from the right source, trying to understand what we heard, try to assimilate it so we can apply it practically in our lives. And when we do that, try to realize that it all has to do with my relationships with Krishna and his devotees, and with others, innocent people and the non-devotees, how I can better serve Krishna in my relationships with others. And then when we apply that, then our relationship with Krishna gets better, and our relationship with everyone else gets better. And that's where we get the higher taste from. Anything else? Kala Grantarashimad Bhagavata Bhagavad Gita Kijai.